This is the day of relief because it's been finally shut up about me. Actually, I was out at a country last week. It was amazing and wonderful. So sort of be away from that for a week. But that said, please go if you are old enough and can. I think it's really important that your voice be heard. Any class issues? Not rich or poor, Wall Street or like down to earth, sort of our class type thing. Is this a class taxing? Not sorry, it's okay. Too much coffee before class. All right, so we've been doing rotational motion, and up until now, we have really used the quantities in rotation in a sense like one-dimensional motion. And by that, what I mean is we haven't really been worried about the vector aspect of them. We've been thinking of them as magnitudes, and we have worried a little bit about direction in terms of, you know, what the direction is and how it makes something rotate. But we haven't really worried about going full three-dimensional and worrying about the vectors. So just a reminder of the type of stuff where we've been so far. We've looked at what happens when you make a pulley with mass. So you no longer can ignore it. It has a moment of inertia, it has mass, and it means it actually takes an angular force, which we call a torque, in order to get the thing to begin to spin or to give it an angular acceleration. So simple problems that you're used to doing now, Newton's laws, just become more complex when you have pulleys and things that rotate that have mass, and you must take that into account. So, for example, this problem, physicists call it an Atwood's problem. We did this last time where we hang two masses over a pulley, but now the pulley has mass, and usually you'll have the words that the rope does not slip. And what they mean by that is that if this moves down an inch, this thing has to rotate in such a way that an inch of the arc length is moved, right? The correlation between the linear motion and the angular motion, that's basically one-to-one. And if you don't say that the rope, you know, if the rope is allowed to slip, then you have no knowledge about that, right? So if you look at the free body diagrams for these two masses, you sort of have sort of the standard thing for this mass, is a tension pulling up and mass and 1g gravity pulling down. Same over here, tension pulling up and 2g pulling down. But notice that these tensions are now different. And the reason they're different is because this thing has to rotate. But it now takes an uneven torque in order for it to rotate. If I pull down here with the same force as I pull here, this will not rotate. But it has to. So we know that the tension here and the tension here have to be unequal if this thing's going to have acceleration. So you now have to worry about the free body diagram for the pulleys. And you have to take it into account. And the sum of the torques is I alpha for that angular motion. And that alpha here is related to this A, because the A that's in the string is the linear acceleration at the edge of that object with radius r. And A is equal to r alpha. Right? S equals r theta, B is equal to r omega, A is equal to r alpha. And so some of the torques is I alpha, so this is the equivalent to the sum of the forces is MA, except for it's an angular piece. So I alpha, I for this particular shape, happens to be 1 half MR squared. Alpha, you rewrite as A over R, and that's equal to the sum of the torques, which is just the force times the lever arm. Okay? And it is just the force times the lever arm when this force is tangential to the circle. Okay, there's a little subtlety. If this lever arm and that force are at right angles to one another, you can just multiply the two across. And we're going to dig into that subtlety today. All right, so are you okay with this? If you forget to do this, if it has mass. You can only forget it if it doesn't have mass. Okay? All right. So, lest there are some among you who might be sitting there thinking, that's fine and nice, Professor Manley, but I don't really give a crap. If that's true, what I'd like to do is now have a moment of contemplation. And I would like you to consider rotation in you. What it really means to you. I actually am only slightly kidding, because I think you'll find that when we get through rotation, there's a lot to the world that you know happens and you never thought about before. So let us ponder your weekend. Suppose, for example, you watch a football game. Right? How do we throw a football? Is that how you throw it? You can. No. If this thing is just moving and not spinning, you get all sorts of weird air on it, right? So it sort of goes like a sick duck. But if you throw it and you spin it, it is very stable, okay? That's why you spin the football, okay? Because then it has stability, which we're going to talk about. It has something called angular momentum, which is conserved. So if you're in a system that has no external force or forces, it doesn't change. So when you throw the football, it now spins and stays oriented, which means this point is always heading through the air, and you get a lot more distance and a lot more control, okay? You play the same game if you want to shoot your neighbor and you want to do it and you're rich and you have a house that's far away, you need a very accurate bullet. And what they discovered was that if you just shoot a ball of lead out of a barrel, it sort of walks around and you can't hit anything very far away. But if you take the inside of the bore and you rifle in a spiral pattern so that when the lead goes down, it acquires a fast spin. Now you've got the bullet like the football, and now you can become vastly more accurate. This is one of those military advances that changes the war. And I don't remember any history. History minor. I forget exactly when that happened, but that's a big deal. If you can shoot the other guys before they can shoot you, you win. I mean, that's sort of how it works. So you know, that's pretty important. Let's suppose you're not into sports, or let's suppose you're in other sports. Let's imagine, for whatever reason that I do not know why you do this, you might choose to stand at the edge of the table. Okay? And do something silly like this. Now, obviously, my generation didn't do much of this. If you do that over the weekend, I want you to ponder exactly what you're doing, right? You have the table, you have the cup, right? The center of mass of the cup is here, and you apply a torque like that so that it flips. Okay? Share that with your friends. They'll be very impressed at all the things that they're learning in physics. Suppose that's not your sport. You may choose to take a ping pong ball. If you're going to properly launch the ping pong ball, you must apply rotation to your arm. Right? And there's important technique in this. So please consider that rotation is very important to you in your life. And actually, when we get a little further along, there are some absolutely amazingly cool things in rotation. So I do want you to pay some attention to this. The other aspect of this is that if I were to pick a point in Physics 113, where people are like, what? It's sort of now. So stay on top of this one, okay? So So the part that we're about to do is basically rotation where I throw in the vectors. And we call, physicists would call that rotational dynamics. And you'll find this in chapter 11. So but we're now going to sort of step in from chapter 10 to chapter 11. So that's sort of the break between doing it sort of without vectors and sort of with what you may find. I just forget, if you look at chapter 10, they may try to do a little bit of the vectors anyway. But so let's consider this. What I would like to do is to create mathematical tools that allow me to describe full three-dimensional rotation. And there, it turns out you can do it with a vector, okay? So rotation is very complicated. This can spin this way, it can spin that way. Those are different rotations. It can spin in this plane, it can spin in that plane, right? Those are totally different rotations. So I have to be able to describe all of that. It can spin slowly, it can spin fast, different rotations. So in order to describe this as one vector, it's actually sort of impressive, I think, that you can come up with something. Imagine that I have the rotation, and I put along the axis of rotation a single vector, okay? And I'm going to let the silver piece sort of be the tip of the vector, the one with the arrow. And what I'd like to do is to put the vector along the axis of rotation. The length of the vector is a magnitude that is equal to omega in magnitude. It tells you how fast this thing is spinning, angular spin. Okay? So if it's long, it's spinning fast. If it's short, it's spinning slowly. If it's spinning in this plane, omega is perpendicular to that plane. If it's spinning in this plane, omega is perpendicular to that plane. So this vector will define, by virtue of where it is, it defines the plane of the rotation. Okay? Or the orientation of the rotation. It's a vector, so you can move it around. But you visualize it as sort of sitting with its tail right at the base of the, on the plane of rotation, along the axis of rotation. That's sort of the easiest way to think about it. Now, we have another issue, which is how do I, given a plane, given the speed of rotation, I have to distinguish this from that, okay? And now we have to have sort of a rule of thumb. And this is, we're going to have a whole series of these, and these all spring from one piece of vector math that we'll be talking about in a few minutes. But let's go ahead and think about this first one. We call it the right-hand rule, but we'll have like five or six of them, and they're all right-hand rules, so I don't know if we should call it the right-hand rule. It's a right-hand rule. So imagine that you grab the axis, okay? And if you grab it with your fingers rotating, with your fingers curling around in the same direction of the rotation, your thumb, at that point, of your right hand is going to point in the direction of that vector, by definition. Okay, I can define it a different way, but that's how it is defined. So, note that if this is rotating the other way, then I have to grasp it like this, and my thumb points southward. We don't say counterclockwise or clockwise, because to do that, it only works if you have defined what direction you're observing it from. Right? If I'm up here and you're always looking at it this way, I can tell you counterclockwise or clockwise. So when you're writing things on paper, be a little bit careful that you can tell me a direction of counterclockwise or clockwise as I look at it. You can specify it that way as you're looking down the plane of paper. But the way that we've defined this vector, omega, it works no matter how you're looking at it. Okay, that rectangle. You okay with that? All right. So if we look at this particular example, this thing is rotating like so with this piece out in front, okay? And I put this that signifies that this axis going through is at right angles to this plane. And I know sometimes it may be hard to visualize. And so omega is a vector that goes up this way, and it's now a vector, so you have to signify it's a vector. And this spins around fast, omega is a longer vector. If it spins the other way, omega would be headed the other direction. So, okay? Okay, so what is the acceleration vector? That denotes the rate of change of the linear velocity with respect to time. Omega is the angular velocity, so alpha represents the rate of change of omega with respect to time. If this thing has a positive angular acceleration, omega is getting bigger. Right? If it has a negative angular acceleration, it means omega is getting smaller. Okay, it means its magnitude is decreasing. So in the same way that we use linear acceleration, if I'm moving with some velocity and I have an acceleration in the same direction, that velocity is increasing. If I'm moving with some velocity in this direction and I have an acceleration the opposite way, I'm slowing down. I may still be moving this way, but I'm slowing down. I may eventually stop and go backwards. Okay? So it's completely analogous in angular motion. If omega is increasing with time, then alpha is a vector that's along omega. If omega is decreasing with time, alpha is a vector opposite. That is pointed in a direction opposite of omega. All right. Torque we've defined as I alpha. In magnitude, if I have a larger torque, I have a larger alpha. Now we want to add the vector piece in. So if alpha is along omega, which means it is spinning things up, going faster and faster, then it means I must have a torque that is such that it keeps spinning things up. It provides the alpha, right? You have, if alpha is non-zero, the torque must be non-zero. This is, moment of inertia is like mass. It has no direction, so you have no vector. But angular acceleration clearly can have a magnitude and direction, so it's a vector. And force always has a magnitude and direction, it's a vector. So remember, torque is this angular force. So this is a vector equation, so it's just sort of like F equals ma. And in this case, the torque is in the same direction as alpha, just like the net force is in the same direction as linear acceleration. Okay? So it's the same sort of thing. But now I'd like to sort of give you the first real subtlety in this. And we talked a little bit about this. We talked about the fact that if what you want to do, for example, is to make this door have an angular acceleration, you don't push it close to the axis. You push it far from the axis. So we know that the effect, this torque, has a scale factor that depends on how far you are from the axis, right? It also has a directional dependence that's very important. If I push perpendicular to the door, I'll get this thing to accelerate. And if I do the same push, if there's something here and I push sort of in that direction, instead of that direction, the door's not going to open. Right? It's a no-brainer, you know this. Okay, but now we have to quantify this. So there's more to torque than just being the lever arm times the force at this point of application. Okay? It also depends on the direction or the relative aspect of that lever arm that is the point where it's applied to the axis and the direction of the force. So let's think about that for a moment. Let's suppose that I have some sort of object, okay, and that it's rotating about an axis. And let's suppose that I act on this with a force. Doesn't matter where it comes from, but let's suppose it is in that direction. Okay? As we've thought about this so far, we would have just said that the torque is R cross F, right? So the distance, the R that we're talking about, is really a vector from the axis to the point of application. Okay? What I'd like you to do is to consider the fact that this force has one component that's this way and one component that's that way. This piece I'm going to call F parallel for being along this lever arm. And this piece I'm going to call F perpendicular. That is, the piece of the force that's perpendicular to that lever arm. And if you look at this, this parallel piece is the piece that causes no rotation. That's equivalent to me going to the door and pushing away from the axis of rotation, but not actually causing the door. This perpendicular piece is the piece that causes the door to rotate. So what we'd like to do is to define torque in such a way that the force that gets projected out when you have some general force is only this piece that's perpendicular to that line. Right? And if you think about that, if this is angle theta, then the piece that we have here is equal to F times the sine of that angle theta. Alright, so that's the piece you want to project out. When you've defined theta, basically what I'd like to do is to take this vector R and move it over here, and this vector F and move it over there. So here's R. And it's true that F acts over here, but it's a vector, so it's the same vector if I move it around. So if I take F and I put them so their two tails are together, then what you'll notice is this angle really is this angle. So it's the angle between those two vectors. Now, recall, one of the things we've already done is we defined something which is called F dot, well, let's do R dot F. We've defined something called the scalar product, or the dot product, where it would be written as R dot F, and that would be the magnitude of R times the magnitude of F times the cosine of the angle between them. And if you recall what this is doing, it's very useful for work, right? Because work is the distance you go along the direction of the force. What this does is it projects out the piece of the force that is along R, and it multiplies the two together, and it gives you just the magnitude. So that's definitely not what we need, right? Because one, torque is a vector, so we need to end up something that multiplies the R times the F and gives us a vector. Two, it's projecting out the wrong piece. So we need to invent something that one is a vector and two projects out the perpendicular piece instead of the parallel piece. And so people have defined it as a second type of vector multiplication. And this type is called the cross product. So we define it as R, and now you put an X here because it's a very important moment for us. This is really wonderful to put it in. It's defined as R cross F. And from now on, you will always get confused when you're looking at something as to whether we're talking a coordinate X or whether that's a cross product. Okay? So it's one of those little things that keeps the masses in their place. You have to have enough. I mean, it's very, why do you come to college in the first place? You have to learn enough layers of language and complication so that nobody else can do it. And then you're assured of a job. So here's an example. This is not R times X times F. It is not simply R times F. These are vectors, so they're not numbers. So it's called the cross product, R cross F. And this particular beast takes the magnitude of R, multiplies it by the magnitude of F, times the sine of the angle between them when you have them oriented like we have those two up there. Okay, so their tails are together. And note that it's the small angle between them, not the big one that goes around the other way. Okay? And now there's one piece we're missing. That's a vector, I want a vector. This is now a magnitude, okay, just like that's a magnitude. So I have to add a direction to this to call it a vector, okay? And the direction in this case that we want, let's consider a moment. This force will have a perpendicular piece like so that's coming down, okay? The alpha that will produce will cause this thing to rotate like so, clockwise, from where we're looking, right? We want the torque and an alpha so the alpha has to be in such a direction that would be the increasing omega, which means alpha has to be into the board, okay? So I could say something like that. So that's like the unit vector in the equation. Now, there's a right-hand rule that we're going to use in order to do this. And so all the right-hand rules that you'll hear about really spring from this one. And the rule is to get the direction of the cross product, you take your hand and you put your fingers sort of in the plane that contains the two vectors. You put them up along the first vector in the cross product, the R in this case. You then curl them in the direction, so in this case it would be like that, okay? You then curl these fingers in the direction of the small angle between the two when you have them oriented like this. You have to have them tail to tail, because that's what you mean when you say the opening angle between the vectors. Fingers along R, curl them in the direction of the small angle between them toward the second vector, and your thumb will point in the direction of the cross product. And it is going to be perpendicular to both of these vectors. There are different ways to think about this. You can do this. You may have learned it like that, because you're fortunate to have digits that can be orthogonal in there if you want. So, but now you have to remember what's curling into what. So you take this finger, curl it into that, right? So that's the orientation. That's the opening angle. And your thumb now points in the direction of the cross product. You do it with your left hand, you're going the wrong way. This is the right hand. I have told you that you're only allowed to have notes and formulas on an 8.5 by 11 inch sheet of paper for your exams. If you are in need and you would like to write an L and an R on your hands to keep this straight before you come to exams, you're allowed to do that. No questions asked. Okay, if you plan to go into something where you're going to do this a lot, if you want to tattoo them, that's also okay. Alright, so there's another way to think about this. If you can imagine if we had a screw that we were putting into the wall right there, okay, and we had a screwdriver, and we put it on the head of the screw, and we turned it such that this rotates in that direction, then the screw goes into the wall in the direction of the right hand rule. Okay? Now, lest you forget any of these, I'm going to share with you a story of how I remember these things. This story happened a long, many years ago when I was sitting where you're sitting. Not where you're sitting, but in a small college in North Carolina where I was. And in my case, I was sitting in the back with the soccer players. My dad was a professor there, so I was a freshman, a senior soccer player, so they took me under their wing and showed me the ways of the world. So that was, we would sit back there and cut up. And how I would spend my time in physics class was gazing at a delightful woman named Patty Keller, who was brilliant, brilliant woman. She got her PhD in organic chemistry. I don't know what she's doing now. But she's very pretty and quite voluptuous, and physics is boring, and so, you know, I'm sure none of you are doing this. So, my professor was truly horrible, and let me rephrase that. He was a bit of a space case, and so he was explaining this rule to Patty, and he explained that you can put the screw up here, and you can take the screwdriver, and you can do this, and he looks at her and goes, Patty, surely you've screwed before. And then both little dissies and the other one, what they said, right back row was on the floor, right? And so because we were being very noisy in our hilarity about this, they both turned and looked, and then of course Patty figured out what he said, and H-shaped the red, and just looks at him, Dr. Stevenson! And he said this, he died over the weekend, I'm sad to say. He was a really gentle soul, but I think he died never knowing what was all happening. At any rate, so now you will never forget the right hand rule. Okay? So, what I'd like to do is to think about that a bit more. I decided not to say practice that. We're going to do a few exercises here. So suppose I have a vector A like so, and I have a vector B like this. What is the direction of A cross B? Come on, I see one hand up doing this. I mean, on a test, if I don't look up and see you all going, there's something wrong. Okay? Fingers are wrong. A, curl it into B, your thumb comes out. What is the direction of B cross A? You know, 5 times 3 is 15. 3 times 5 is 15. Mathematicians say that they're commutative. R cross R dot F, F dot DS or DS dot F gives you the same work. It's commutative. This isn't. Okay? B cross A, remember A cross B gives you something coming out. B cross A gives you something going in. It has the same magnitude, but it is now opposite in direction. So it matters. The order matters. Okay? What would be the cross product if A is like this and B is like this? Like in the dot product, if they are perpendicular to one another, the dot product is zero. In this case, it's the opposite way. Right? If they are perpendicular to one another, the sine theta is then one, and you're just multiplying by one another. So, for example, now that the shining light of enlightenment and this fruit product is upon you, you can think about what's going on here. R cross F, at this point, R is going out, F is down. This torque from that force is into the board. This one has an R this way, cross F, gives you a torque out of the board. So they come in with opposite sign, okay? And I guess the way we've defined it, alpha, so that is, remember, if this torque is bigger, this force is bigger, it rotates it like that, that gives me an alpha that is into the board. Yes?
I'm not seeing how on the right side that
yeah, so now if we look at this, we have this tension applied at that point, and the R that it rotates about is there. So here would be the R vector, here would be the force vector. And so put your fingers along R, curl them down in the direction of the tension, and your fingers now go into the board. Your thumb goes into the board. So the direction of R cross F, which is the direction of the force, is going to be into the board.
Okay, so on the other side.
On the other side, it's the same thing that R goes from the center out to this point where it's applied. Put your fingers on R, cross into F, and your thumb comes out. No, tension is pulling down that point. Okay? Alright. So, for these types of problems, in general, you don't need to think about the vector part of it. And I really sort of recommend you usually don't, just because it takes you three-dimensional and it sort of gets confusing. And you can visualize this rotating like so, rotating like so, and that's really all you need for these problems, because they're effectively one-dimensional problems, okay, in terms of the rotation. This way or that way, call one positive to go with the acceleration and one negative to go against it. That's usually what you need to do, all you need to do. As we now begin to move into some other things, you'll have to use the vector aspect. But I just wanted to point out that this kind of problem is completely consistent with our definition of all the vectors. You can certainly do this with the vector formulation. And honestly, I'd have to go and look at your book. I'm not sure whether they present it with vectors or not. Yes?
So how are we supposed to actually write this down with the vector?
That's a good question. Sometimes it may be a little awkward. So you may have to say, you can specify, for example, if you know something is rotating in the plane of the paper, right? You can specify specify the direction of omega by saying it is rotating, and you might say, in a direction that is clockwise as I look down on the paper. Or omega is pointing out of the paper, or omega is pointing into the paper. It's not pretty in English. But you do have to do it, right? If I ask you for omega and you just give me a magnitude, it's not correct, because omega is a vector. Unless you're doing a problem where it's clearly sort of being used as a scale, like one of these, you've been doing sort of these one-dimensional constant alpha problems. We don't generally worry too much about the vector aspect of it there. We're just talking about when it's omega zero, when does it reach a certain value. But if I ask you specifically for omega, especially if I put a vector over it, then you've got to give me the direction. Okay? Any questions about this stuff for now? Get real good cross product. You'll see it a lot. It's very similar to the dot product. All right, let me do one more of these. Because now we've gone three-dimensional, all right? So now we want to have vectors going in and out of the board. There's a way that we signified this. If you're drawing vectors and you want to show them coming out of the board or out of the paper, you put a dot. If you want to show them going into the board, you would put a cross. And the way to think about this and remember this is you think of these things as little arrows. So if it is coming at me, what you see is just the point of the arrow. If it is moving away from you, you see the feathers. Okay? So from now on, we'll be doing three-dimensional, we'll be doing this at the Wazo 114, but we'll look at the other here. So you have to sort of keep that in mind. So what that means is I can now ask you a similar sort of problem like we did here. Let us say that A is a vector coming out at you, and B is a vector that goes straight up. What is the direction of the cross product, A cross B? Fingers along A. A is a vector now that's coming out. So it's like that. You curl them into the direction of B. So the vector will be going to directly to the left from your point of view. I'm sorry. Did I say left? Yeah, A. A cross B, yes. It goes to the left. You okay with that?
No,
A is a vector that's coming straight out at you. I take my right hand, I put my fingers along A, which is coming straight out at you. In your case, it's this way, right? Straight back. Straight back. Right. Sorry. So your fingers are along A, going in the direction of A. Curl them in the direction of B along the direction of the smallest angle, right? So you have to go 3 times 90 degrees this way, but only 1 times 90 degrees that way. So you curl them up like that, your thumb goes that way. Okay? Yes?
That was B cross A.
If it were B cross A, fingers in the direction of B, curl them in the direction of A, goes the other way. A cross B, as we've seen, it's not commutative. A cross B is equal to minus B cross A. It's the same magnitude vector, it's just in the opposite direction.
B cross A again.
Yep. B cross A for this one, I put my fingers in the direction of B, which would be straight up. Okay? I then curl them in the plane of the two vectors, which in this case is the plane coming straight out of the board. Okay? I curl them in that plane in the direction of the smallest angle joining these two vectors, the opening angle, and my thumb goes in the direction of that cross product. In this case, it's B cross A, and it's going to go that way, which is the opposite direction of A cross B. It is strange when you first see it. I want you to get, I'll give you some problems, you'll do some at workshop. Totally work out the kinks. Totally work out the kinks. And I guarantee you, one of you will use your left hand. Don't. Okay? I guarantee you, I will put 4 of these on like your first problem on the next test or something like that, okay? It is totally meant to be a complete and utter giveaway. You know it's coming. It's not an easy thing when you first look at it. Straighten it out and get the kinks out. It's real easy once you get used to it and just get real good at it. And one of the reasons I'm doing this, we're actually going to do this for a little while this semester, and it is a little bit important this semester, but it is totally what, like, the second, third of Physics 114 is all about. If you're not doing crosstalk really well, you're going to be completely hosed. Okay, so I want you to pick it up now. Let us see what we do with this. If you have a clicker, let's do this. Here's what we're going to do. Let's suppose that we have a wheel, a grinding wheel. You basically can use to sharpen a knife on or something. Okay? So let us say that if I pictorially show you that it is spinning this way, if I ask for omega, a vector, and you draw me something like that, it's totally wrong. Right? That's not, this isn't omega. This is some sort of visual aid to give you a sense of how it's rotating, which I like to do. I think it's a little bit easier than if I just said omega is into the board. Okay? You'll get used to the omega in that way. But that's not omega that I wrote. It's sort of a pictorial thing and gives you sort of a sense of the direction of the rotation. Let us now take, let's say that we have somebody is sharpening a knife or something on this grindstone so that, you know, you get sparks coming out this way. And what I'd like to know is, what is the direction of alpha? Okay, and your choices will be up, down, right, left, in, out, and along, up. What do you think? Think about that for a moment. Decide which of the answers you think would be correct. How many of you think it's up? How many of you think it's down? How many of you think it's to the right? How many of you think it's to the left? How many of you think it is into the paper? How many of you think it is out of the paper? Oh my gosh.
Say, pull the diagram a little bit. I think it's a little off that.
Oh.
The red we're talking about.
This is a wheel.
Yeah.
It's spinning. I have a knife that's coming in from the side.
Okay.
Okay. Well, we'll ask again. So this thing is this is sharpening the knife, right? So you're coming in, and the wheel is spinning like this, and the wheel is spinning like this, and you're coming in, pressing against the edge. Maybe that was the problem. Let's try it again. All right, think about it. I want to know the direction of alpha in this problem. Alpha for the wheel. Think it's up, down, right? Left, in, out. Okay, didn't change much. Okay, here's how to think about it. This thing is spinning, okay? If I press against it, I'm gonna be exerting a force that's gonna want to slow it down, right? Omega, in this case, put your fingers along, around the axis, along the direction of rotation, omega is into the paper. Alpha is acting to slow it down. Omega is becoming smaller. Alpha, when you are making omega smaller, is in the direction opposite of omega. So alpha is coming out of the core. Okay? Weird stuff, it's actually not so bad, but you do sort of have to get used to it. So that's why I say don't let up. I mean, it's not. Yeah, I mean, if I had no knife, then there'd be no alpha. Alpha equals zero. If I put the knife even here, if I press against it, it's going to act to slow it down, actually, in this case. If instead I came up beside it, instead of that being a knife, if it were my hand spinning the thing up, right, then alpha would cause omega to get bigger, and then alpha would be into the thing. But alpha is a long omega, which increases omega. So that, you know, I'll assign a lot of problems so you get sort of used to this. Yeah?
So if something is slowing down a spinning body, you should try to get it, and that's like going in the opposite direction, spin something.
If you have something acting to slow down a body, you should try to think of it as going in the opposite direction of the spin. That's what I heard. Okay.
Yeah,
that's
kind of
awesome. Which is, if it's acting to slow it down, then you're acting to decrease omega, and so alpha will be opposite omega. And that's what I think about. Okay? I think probably next time I will, and maybe later today, I will do some more example problems, but I want to go ahead with the conceptual piece right now, and then I'll come back and do more example problems to try to make this a little bit happier for you. So if we stop and think about where we are, in terms of this material, we've talked a lot about things in the linear world and how it relates to the rotational world. So, you know, that we have, say, in the linear world, we might have S being an arc length, and we have a linear V, and we have a linear A. In the rotational world, we have theta, and we have omega, and we have alpha. And there is a relationship. Omega is equal to R, V is equal to R omega. Ooh. And that's a vector thing. Well, no, hold on. That is not a vector equation. Because omega is not in the same direction as linear v. In fact, the two are such different v's, it's hard to imagine. Because if I had something rotating and I consider some point on the edge, its linear velocity is in all different directions, okay? So omega and v are very different. That is definitely not a vector equation. It only relates to magnitudes. So similarly, we have that A is equal to R alpha in magnitude. We have S is equal to R theta. Okay? Then we've talked about mass in the linear world. And we talk about the moment of inertia in the angular world. And the moment of inertia actually depends on the shape of the object and the distribution of the mass. So this is actually a little complicated. So this is actually the integral of r squared dm, if you recall. But for a point mass, it goes as mr squared. Okay. Then we have the force, which in the linear world is a vector force, and in the rotational world we have the torque. And they're related in that the torque is equal to the lever arm vector cross F. Okay? We've looked at kinetic energy, where in the linear world we have 1/2 mv squared. In the angular world we have 1/2 I omega squared. Okay? So now what I'd like to do is to consider what happens if we talk about momentum. Right? In the linear world, we found that a quantity, a vector quantity called momentum, which is the mass times the velocity, was a very useful quantity. I'd like to look at the analog for momentum in the rotational world. And that quantity we call angular momentum. So if we think about what we have as momentum, that's equal to m times v. And we've actually had a lot of luck simply taking the quantities in the linear world and translating them into the angular quantities. M is equal to r theta and v is equal to r omega, etc. So in this case, the momentum, m, will go into what we use as the angular mass, which is I. V is omega. So we're going to define something which is called angular momentum and give it a symbol L, which is equal to I times omega. As momentum is a vector, this is also a vector. The angular momentum vector is a long omega. If you recall that the force is equal to the change in the momentum with respect to time, this is Newton's second law, right? If I take momentum and convert it into mv, and I pull the derivative in, then I have the force is equal to mass times the derivative of the velocity, which becomes the acceleration, so that's ma. If we assume that the mass doesn't change. So now what I want to do is think about that from the angular point of view. And that would be, we have the torque is equal to the change in the angular momentum with respect to time. Which is I times alpha. So this is exactly analogous. You okay with that? So why was linear momentum such a useful quantity for us? Why is it such a useful quantity? It's conserved. Why do I care? It totally gives you a handle on what's going on. Right? The minute I say momentum is conserved in this system, that gives me freedom to set up a vector of linear momentum conservation, because the momentum I start with is the same as the momentum I end with. It's a vector, which means I get three separate equations out of that. So if you get off on solving problems, you get three equations, and that means you have three momentum. That's good. Right? So that's what you want. It allows, it gives you a good handle. So in the same way, we have that angular momentum is conserved. In an isolated system. What I mean by an isolated system is you don't have some external torque. So no external torque. Angular momentum in it is conserved. So that means that the total angular momentum that you start with is what you end with. Okay? So I would like to see, would one of you be kind enough to volunteer to come up and help me with a demo? It involves, you know, being awesome.
Yay!
Somebody in here's got some guts. And your name is Shakri. Nice to meet you, Shakri.
I've been up with you before.
You've been up with me before. Yes. But I have no name. So if I had my way, everyone in the world would always basically get their name tattooed across their forehead. That would so help me. So, I would like you to take a seat on the stool. And note that the stool spins freely, roughly. So this now, the stool, the fact that the stool spins means that in this plane, there's no torque on it. Alright, so it's an isolated system. Okay. Now, Cree, I'd like you to take this mass and this mass. And what I want to do is, well no, let's do this differently. Let's start out. So, Shakri, as all of us do, has a moment of inertia, okay? So, lift your legs up and just keep them there. And if I spin her, okay, she has a moment of inertia. I had to exert a torque to spin her. There we go. Okay. Now, what I'd like to do is increase her moment of inertia by giving her these masses. So we've given her a bigger M. And now, if you would be so kind, I would like you to take them, extend them out. And now I'm going to rotate her. So now she has, and now pull them in. Now put them out. Okay. You good? You still? Yeah, I know. You all right? Okay. So I want to do it again. I want to go a little bit faster. But are you not busy yet? If you throw up on me, you're cooking. Okay. Right now. All right. So try it again. That's pretty weird, right? All right. Great. Let's give Shakri a hand. There's a reason why I gave you the weights and I spun you, because there's a story that's floating out here, and I believe it's true. I heard it as true, but I don't remember who it was, but years ago, apparently some professor did this, and the student spun him like this, okay? And the professor goes like that, and the student didn't realize what he was going to do, and the weights went right into the student's face, and there were teeth on the floor. Yes. So, This is a job fraught with danger. I risk myself and my students every day. So, okay. What happened? What did you see? What did you see?
Change.
Okay, I change I. So omega change. Right. So what we had was, when I say conservation of angular momentum, that means I omega is conserved. So I omega, where she has the I with the masses in, she has a smallish moment of inertia. And then she puts them out. So it's a new I, right? When they're out, I is big. When they're in, I is small. So when they're in, omega is big. And when they're out, omega is small. Pure conservation of angular momentum. Do you care? You ever watched ice skating? Right? I'm no ice skater, but you watch them, right? When they go into a spin, they go into it like this, right? And they're spinning a little, and then they do this, and they're right? And then watch them when they stop. They don't stop when they're like this, right? What do? They go, wow! And it's great for the show, but what they're really doing is they're changing their moment of inertia, which means I drops to nothing or small, and it's easy for them to stop. They would totally kill themselves if they tried to stop without doing that. Look at divers. You want to do a quadruple somersault? What do you see them do? It's not that they love themselves so much that they're doing this massive hug. And they're totally balling up. Why? They're giving themselves a small amount of inertia. So they can take a smallish torque, get a smallish omega going, and then they ball up where their moment of inertia is nothing, and their omega is really, really high, right? So they get lots of somersaults, and then right before they go in the water, out they go, and their omega stops. Goes really zero. So when they're going in the water, because they always do this total slow motion stuff, right? So you see the little droplet of water that comes up. They go in, and if you look at them, they're just barely rotating at that point. But this is the same person that just a split second before was spinning really fast. Right? So this is massively important in sports at all times. It's really, really cool. And you know it, you see it, but you don't think about what's going on. So, I think rotational motion is really, really cool. So, there's angular momentum turns out to be really important. So, why do you spin football? Why does it matter? Do this, it sort of walks all over the place. I spin it, it goes sailing through the air. Why does that make a difference? If I spin it, I give it an omega. It has a moment of inertia, everything does. It has an omega, it has an angular momentum. Angular momentum is conserved. It's a vector quantity. Angular momentum is a long omega. What it means when it says it's conserved is it doesn't change unless I hit it with a torque. if it's sailing through the air, it largely has no form. So it means that this orientation is fixed. It gives it stability. That's why you put the boring in the rifle, and you spin the propeller. Because it's once you've got it spun up, the only way to change its orientation is to supply an external torque. If it's symmetric, the force of gravity is through the center, with its center of gravity, and there's no torque there because there's no level. Alright? If I put a big mass here, it'd be a little different. You can start to get the torque, you go a little bit here. But if you want to stabilize a satellite, you spin it. It can't change. If you look at missiles, I don't know if you're into Cold War craft or whatever, but when you launch a missile, one of the things you do is you spin it. It helps give it stability. So it's very important. Yes?
So what about with the gyroscope? You do have control panel, but it still stays on.
That's next class. And that's when things get really weird. So let me... Wow. I totally lost that thought. Give me a moment. It was a good one. We're talking about missiles. The gun. Things being spun. Conservation manual. Holy crap, getting old. I don't remember where it was, so I guess we're done.